This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. For families with special needs children, putting kids into institutional care can be a heart-wrenching choice of last resort. Many parents and caregivers prefer to give their children and keep them at home where they can give them as much love and attention as possible. A Medicaid program gives these families the extra support they need to do so. It pays for things like medical equipment and therapy. But as WUNC reporter Jason DeBruin found out, there are thousands of families on the wait list. Jason, welcome back.
Hi, Frank.
Tell us more about the program.
So first of all, it's Medicaid dollars, but it is a waiver program. So these aren't people, these would be people who don't qualify for Medicaid because they make too much money, but because of the severity of their need, they qualify for what's called this waiver. And so that's where the money comes from. And then as you mentioned, it largely helps families with children with severe autism, perhaps other severe IDD, intellectual and developmental disabilities, get in-home therapy. You know, there's speech and behavioral therapies that really are quite helpful for these children who can then, you know, advance cognitively to levels that they would not be able to advance to without this therapy.
And of course, the challenge for families is they may have other children, and it becomes, we're talking about children with severe disability, so it's very difficult to manage these children.
No, absolutely. And in some cases, or even many cases, these children can turn violent. Then they can potentially turn on their siblings. You know, sometimes they're the oldest child. You know, they're maybe 6 or 7 or 8 or even 10 years old. So they're physically, you know, strong and the size of a 10-year-old, but they're maybe, you know, emotionally and cognitively the age of, say, a 2 or a 3-year-old. Well, then they have an actual 2 or 3-year-old brother and sister, and then that can be difficult for the mother and father to sort of keep the older child away from the younger child sometimes. And it's very difficult and, of course, heart-wrenching, as you can imagine. I mean, these are your babies, these are your kids, and
right.
So it can be very difficult.
But that in-home help can be the difference between keeping them and sending them to institutions. And as you say, there's a program available, but there's a huge wait list.
Exactly. So the state has said that we want to help these families. We want to give them these services to help them stay in the home, right? We've had this shift away from institutionalization, which the research shows is a very good thing. But as you say, you know, there is this wait list. So it's not an entitlement program. So even if you do qualify for services, if there's not enough funding, then you're put on this wait list. And the numbers are pretty stark. So there's about 12,500 families who qualify and are getting funding. And for these people, it's really helping. But there's almost about that many people, about 12,500 or a little bit less thousand people, families, I should say, who have, the state has said, yes, you qualify, you deserve this money, but there just simply isn't enough money to go around.
And that may not be the whole picture. Those are just the families that have actually gone through the process of applying for this waiver, right?
No, that's a great point. Many times in stories like these, we talk about, oh, you know, these people qualify and there's probably, you know, thousands more that could use this help. No, these are people that, as you say, have gone through the process and the state has said, yes, you qualify, but we just don't have the money.
You profiled one family that's on the wait list. Tell us about Rowan and what he and his siblings and family are dealing with.
Right. So Rowan is a 6-year-old. He might be 7 now. I apologize. And he's got young twin sisters. He has Fragile X. So he is severely handicapped. And he can sometimes turn violent on his sisters. And his mother struggles, you know, to care for him. And then also to, you know, provide care for his sisters. And they are one of these families that are on that wait list and really could benefit from these services.
Well, here's a clip of Rowan's mother, Desiree Moffitt, talking about taking her son to the emergency room for help.
We cried together before we took him. When you're not given the help that you need and you have to decide to take your 5-year-old child and put him in a situation that you don't even know what it looks like. But all you know is you have to get your kid out of the house to keep your other kid safe. Like, that's a disgusting decision that you have to make. And we made it.
That was a clip of Desiree Moffitt. She's the mother of a child with a severe disability. We're talking with WUNC reporter Jason DeBruin. So what happens to the children and the families of those who qualify but can't get the help?
In short, they suffer. I mean, that's the truth of it. When you qualify and when you're on this wait list, you do get some services. So I shouldn't say that you're just completely ignored, but it's not nearly enough. You know, for the families whose children maybe aren't as severely handicapped as Rowan is, they can perhaps survive. Maybe one parent can stay at home. But, you know, they talk about having severe anxiety. It is a major stressor on whichever parent it is that stays home. Of course, that affects people's marriage. If they are married to begin with, or in some cases, you know, of course, a single parent might have to suffer through this alone. For the Moffitts, they unfortunately had to send Rowan to Butner to an institution.
That's an interesting one. Let me interrupt. But sure. is there a different kind of assistance available? Because that would be expensive,
right,
too, I would think.
It is. And in fact, they then sent him to South Carolina to an even more intensive, and that's where he actually is right now. So there are other streams of funding that are available, but they are few. It's very little. And you really have to fight for every penny, every scrap that you get there. And, you know, I should mention, Desiree has a master's. I mean, she and her husband are, you know, middle class, intelligent people, and they were having to fight for every scrap that they can get while they're on this wait list. And you know, of course, nobody wants to send their child off to an institution, certainly not one that's 4 hours away in South Carolina. But you know, this is the reality for these people who again qualify for these services, this in-home care, but don't get it.
Well, you also talked with a doctor who treats these patients. This is Dr. Ave Maria Lekevich, who treats patients like Rowan.
Sometimes I don't feel like I can do what needs to be done for some of the families. And some of the families are pretty tenacious, and so it's not so much of a problem because I know they'll be back. And some families, I feel, may get lost. And that's hard. I mean, that's really hard because I think it would be better if we could be there for all of them.
That's a clip of Dr. Ave Maria Lekevich, a Duke Health pediatric neurologist who sees patients with severe intellectual disabilities. What about the numbers? I mean, are they growing, shrinking in terms of the need for this kind of help?
Growing, as you might imagine. There have been some small increases in the slots, these innovation waiver slots, meaning the people who qualify for these services, but certainly the need is outpacing the active slots. So if you look at it on a line graph, you know, the bottom line is getting ever closer to that top line, even as that top line increases slightly.
You're talking with reporter Jason DeBruin today on The State of Things. Talking about a Medicare waiver program that does allow for in-home help for parents with children who have severe disabilities, but it is not nearly meeting the need. You know, we've talked a lot in this state about expanding Medicaid. Is that part of the picture here, or is this waiver not even in that picture?
So that's a good question, and of course, it would be an expansion of Medicaid, but it is not an expansion of Medicaid the way that we have sort of commonly discussed it here over the past couple of years. That quote-unquote Medicaid expansion is from Obamacare, it's from the Affordable Care Act, it's for people who cannot pay for medical care on their own. They don't have health insurance. They meet an income threshold. This innovations waiver, if it were to be expanded, would be a completely separate program from the quote-unquote Medicaid expansion that we hear about.
So in terms of dollars, what are we talking about? How much more would it cost to serve just those who have qualified and can't get help?
Well, it's a lot, and this is where some of the rubber hits the road, to be honest. So the services, when people do qualify, are actually quite robust, and that's where people like Dr. Lekevich, you know, really can see a benefit in the families that get the services. At the top line, you can actually qualify for up to $135,000 in help per year per family. And I should maybe mention, this is a lifelong service. So it's potentially possible that one person would get $135,000 worth of help per year for the rest of their life. Now, certainly there are, you know, very few people that get that full amount, right, but the average is about 65,000. So, you know, there's 12,500 families that get help every year, and they get an average of about $65,000 of help. Well, that comes out to about $800 million per year, which certainly is a significant amount of money. Now, North Carolina Medicaid is such that we pull down about two-thirds of those dollars from the federal government, but of course, you know, one-third is still the state's responsibility. So as we said, there's about 12,500 families that qualify that are, you know, on active slots, almost that many that are on the wait list. So if we were to wipe out the wait list completely, you know, that would be another about $800 million per year that would be spent on these programs. And again, you know, the state taxpayer would cover only about one third of that. But nonetheless, it's a you know, pretty sizable chunk of money.
Sure. I mean, your tax bill would go up by an average of $100 or so, maybe $100 to $200 a year. It would be your individual tax increase to cover that need. So I guess you could think about that as a matter of conscience. But as a financial matter, do we know what the costs are of not meeting these needs? I mean, obviously the families bear the greatest burden and the individuals. Are there other social costs that are borne by all of us by not meeting this need directly?
Well, of course. I mean, so first of all, you have one parent who has very likely has to stay at home. That parent then is not able to go out and get a job, you know, contribute in that way. Certainly there are extreme stresses that are placed on these families. And so that has all kinds of other costs associated with it, you know, not only for medical care for the parents, of course, but also in how, you know, they contribute to society, how much they can volunteer in other areas. Perhaps they have to choose jobs in certain areas. In fact, I can tell you that some of these parents do choose to have jobs that are closer to, say, a Duke or a UNC, where in some cases they can perhaps find people who are willing to volunteer and help them out. We didn't talk about this, but you won't be surprised to learn that the urban-rural divide, of course, exists here as well.
So you'd be drawing people from rural areas to more
sure.
people to live in the urban areas. Yeah.
Right. So, of course, there are massive other opportunity costs, to use sort of a technical economic term. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of downstream costs. I don't know that anyone has done a full analysis, but it's certainly in the millions or potentially even tens or hundreds of millions.
Jason DeBruin is WUNC's data reporter, and you can find a link to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Jason, thank you.
You're welcome.
Just ahead, we're going to talk to two independent filmmakers about their work and why they're stepping away from the film festival circuit. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.